Well, so here we are, Kelly. How do I pronounce your surname?
Waitcher. Kelly Waitcher. I'll be there in a minute.
Lovely. Kelly Waitcher and David and Dana Hagstrom, welcome so much to the Six Star Business Podcast. Pete and I are really excited to have you here. And
well, this is the first, isn't it, Av? Like, we have four. We've got five people on the podcast. It's like, bring all your friends. That's brilliant. It's going to make a really great dynamic, yeah.
We're at the pub, you see. So we normally have four chairs. We've just pulled over a fifth and everyone's sitting around. And now this is beautiful. So, and it's the first time we've had anyone in Mexico. So there you go. But we should have a map, Pete, around the world and notch up where everyone comes from. That would be fun to do.
There you go.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Well, to get us started, I always love to ask our guests to introduce themselves for the benefit of our listeners. So if you could, when I say your name, Kelly Waitcher, you tell us your name, who you are, where you are in the world, who you serve, and maybe something that you do outside of your business and your work, something interesting about yourself. So who would like to go first?
Go on, Kelly.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to say let the Mexicans go first, but, you know. Hello. Well, my name is Kelly Waitcher. I have a business called Corporate Magic. People say to me, do you pull a rabbit out of your hat? And I say, no, the magic is in you and not in me. So my purpose of being here, and not just on the Six Star Podcast, but in what I do is I drive individual and inspirational change in people through their behavior, through their learning, through coaching, through leadership development, to really get the magic from people so that they can discover what they have within them and how to bring that out to really be their best selves out in their work, in their families, in their relationships, in their homes. And I use it a basis of strengths and talent development with that. And I'm really fortunate to love what I do. One of the things interesting about me, oh, my gosh, there's so many things, Evelyn. What can I say? I feel like I live in a small zoo. I have an 8-year-old boy, so who's the love of my life and mostly the source of most things that I do outside of my work. And we have a rabbit and cats and dogs, and it's all going on here. But I just, you know what, I love being a mum, and my work is so much not like work that I just feel like I'm just constantly doing it, just with my community. I volunteer in the community. I just am really interested in and taken by people's behavior and how they act and how they respond in the world. So
that's beautiful.
It's very interesting in the times we're having now.
Absolutely. And whereabouts are you, Kelly?
Sorry, I'm in Sydney in Australia.
Okay. Lovely. You're welcome. Thank you.
My pleasure. But I am really a Womble, Pete. I was born in Wimbledon in England.
Oh, excellent. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you are.
Dana and David, what about yourselves?
Go ahead. All right. Well, we're kind of the dynamic duo here. But I'll speak for both of us. If I forget something, he'll jump in. Well, thanks for having us on. We are expats actually living in Mexico, but I'm a retired paralegal and David's a retired pastor. And when we got to Mexico in our retirement, we decided that we had a lot more to give. We had a lot of skills and things that we could build upon and learn how to monetize. And so we've become online marketing strategy coaches, helping other people like us in second careers to find success online. And I loved what you were saying, Kelly, because we do the kind of the same thing. We love to help people find those gold mines inside that they can monetize and then show them how to do that online, because that's a lot different than if you're doing it face to face.
Something interesting about you.
Oh, something interesting. I'm a published author. In retirement, I've always wanted to be a published author. And I, as a child, thought that was going to be one of those steamy romantic novel kind of authors. But no, God had a different plan for me. I'm actually publishing devotion. I walk through books of the Bible and help people kind of connect their life with the words of the Bible. And so four, and we're coming out with probably another two in the next
couple
six
months.
So yeah, that's kind of a fun fact.
That's cool.
What about you, David? What makes you tick?
What makes me interesting? My passion has always been biblical interpretation. And I did that throughout a career in ministry, but now I get to be my wife's editor and edit her books. I've got a couple of my own that are out there, but now I'm busy editing hers. And we've three Japanese chins and one German Shepherd puppy here.
Yeah.
Our human children are in four different time zones, so they're harder to keep in touch with.
Do you have grandchildren?
We do.
We
do.
No.
Three. Yes, and they're all in our oldest daughter has three. And we've not met one of them, but on our next trip to the United States, we're going to meet our third grandchild. So we're super excited about that.
And why Mexico?
Well, let me answer that one. Really, several things, but it started out with a particular evening when I was maybe a little bit frustrated with my final parish that we were serving in the United States, partly because I had been in huge congregations prior to that. And now this one, in my last one, was a very small congregation. And I was just felt like a fish out of water. I just really didn't fit. And one night I was looking at our pension account and told Dana, we really can't afford to retire until we work another 6 to 8 more years. And then I sort of flippantly said, unless we just retire now and move to Mexico.
I didn't know it was a joke. I really didn't. I knew how frustrated he was, and I knew the congregation was struggling. So when he said that, I'm like, okay, let's go. Of course, we prayed and we did all the things you do, and all the doors kept opening.
Yeah, we talked to our financial advisor. We did all the due diligence. Yeah. But within less than a year, we were here, living here full time.
Because the cost of living in Mexico, I don't know if you're familiar. I mean, it's just so much. The dollar goes so much further.
Mm-hmm. And we had quite a few Hispanic friends in the United States that we just loved and loved their cult and their food, yes. So that made us look here. And the climate is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have air conditioning or furnaces. It's just perfect all the time.
Wow.
Making me very envious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such an interesting story. Pat and Kelly?
It must be like our Brisbane.
Yeah, probably quite similar, although it still gets cold up here, right?
Well, here we are in this space together talking about six-star business. And I guess now that we've kind of got to know each other a little bit, it's always really interesting to Av and me to find out a little bit more about why people decide to show up here. Six star, it's quite a, you know, esoteric concept. It's something that Av and I just stumbled across end of last year. We're finding that it means different things to different people. So Dana and David, I guess to start with you, when you first heard this idea of six star business, what was it about it that kind of attracted you to it and has held your interest long enough to come down to the six-star pub and have a chat about it?
Well, you always strive for excellence and to be the best you can be. And we do that in our own business. We also help our you know, clients do the same thing. And so when you think of five-star, you know, you go to those five-star restaurants or hotels. Well, to me, six stars is even better than that. So getting better than you even thought you could be. I've just been curious about the conversation of what a six-star business could look like. So in my mind, it's striving to be better than you were yesterday, today. Mm.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And I guess from our own standpoint, it's seeking to honor God in what we do, and that seeing God as a sort of a silent partner in our business and in all of our interactions.
How about you, Kelly?
Sorry. I was just going to say, I really love that. Yeah.
I was thinking about this because I was listening to some of your earlier podcasts, and I come from, my background was in hotels and hospitality. So I've worked in 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, people that think that they're 6-star hotels. And I was thinking about what that difference is. And I think I remember a hotel chain who, they're a French hotel chain, and what they did was they started to ask their people to, as part of their brand and their 6-star-iness, to say bon when they checked in as part of their French branding. And it was magnifique. It was, and I won't mention the brand, but what I found really interesting, and this is how I see the difference between 5 and 6-star, is that 5-star, you're technically 5-star when you tick the boxes for things that you have. Yeah, it's different services, number of bathrooms, and what you have in your mini bars, how your bedrooms are, the things like that. But I remember going into one of the hotels in Brisbane, actually, and I walked in and someone said, "Bonjour." And I remember thinking that it's a 5-star hotel, but it's not it's not a 5-star experience. Yeah, because I think that their idea around it was not just to say bonjour, but people say, "Well, you are here. It is magnifique," and so that makes me laugh. So what I think 6-star is, it's more of a holistic approach where you are going the extra mile. You are engaging people in your workforce who have those innate talents and that real passion and drive to really be part of something that is amazing and contributing, that inspires and influences others, and that people, if people are doing what they love, then they're much more likely to do it better and to seek excellence in what they're doing. And I think when you're talking about six stars in business or in service, it's very much a selfless and service mindset to me, and it's very service-oriented, not just motivated by the money, but motivated truly by creating a unique experience for the person who is coming into your business and something that they're not going to get everywhere they go. So in my business, I mean, there are thousands and thousands of coaches around the world, yeah, and people that do leadership development and leadership training. But I believe that the people who I work with get a unique experience because of what I bring to it. And to me, that's what creates a 6-star business. Is all of that encompassed into an entire experience for your client or your customer?
If I can just build on that, when we meet with a coaching client and I know what we have accomplished in previous sessions, I may have a preconceived notion of, well, we're going to cover A, B, and C tonight, and here's where we're going with that. But as we talk, and as we're listening, we always want to be open and available to what are the needs that our client is bringing to this session. And if it needs to go an entirely different way in order to meet their needs where they are today, then we want to be there for them to meet them where they are and to help them with.
I love that, David. I mean, and that's like the two questions that I ask my clients before I even get started with them. The questions I ask myself: who is your customer? What is their need? Mm-hmm. Because you're not providing a service if you're not assisting them to meet those needs.
Right. And we've probably all had coaches who do come with their agenda and they shove it down your throat. Yeah. And you walk away going, well, I didn't learn anything. I don't feel like I moved the needle this week. I've learned that's the kind of coach I don't want to be.
Right.
You have to have that behavioral flexibility that they talk about, the agile world that we're in. But really, it's being able to have, I think, a lot of tools in your belt that you can bring out as you need them, and use them in it, where they're going to serve your client and your customer.
So what I heard as one of the things that came up, just what both of you said then, which I love, by the way, is the need or the act of seeking to understand from a place of true purpose, as in you genuinely want to understand where someone is at and then serve based on that, rather than being prescriptive about this is the next step or this is the experience you will absolutely have or this is the outcome you're going to have rigidly, which might be the five star if that was what was promised on the upfront sign before you went into that hotel or restaurant or whatever it was. And if you got all those things, then it would be five star. Would that be, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. I think that's right. And I think that there are a couple of thoughts around that. I think that some people believe, and it's very efficient to have an off-the-shelf product. Yeah, it's efficient and it's monetizable and all those sorts of things to have an off-the-shelf product. And I think that works for a lot of people. Yeah. But if I want to work in a space where I'm creating truly transformational change with people, and it doesn't happen all the time, but when you get someone who has the courage and the willingness to really dig deep and work with you on that, I think you can create very long-lasting transformational change. And so there is that prescriptive, and then there is that kind of, if you like, tailor-made for the client. And it depends who the client is and what the customer is asking for as well, I guess.
Sure.
We have boxed up our entire, what we call your pathway to profit, in a course that people can purchase. But the statistics of courses in general that come out like that is that something like 3-5% of people actually complete them and do the work. And
on their own.
That's on their own. Yeah. If we can coach somebody and walk with them step by step through the process, we are much more confident of achieving some kind of real transformational change, like you mentioned. And it's much more rewarding for them and for us as well.
No, I was just going to say, it's like one of the things that I say all the time is I don't want to be a one-hit wonder. I'm not just coming in for a day of time management and then leaving you. It's, we want stickiness. In a six-star business, you want stickiness. Whatever you're doing, you want it to stick. You want people to be able to actually have the moment to experience it, to experience the wins that they get from practicing what you're teaching them or using the tools that you're giving them, so that it does create an impact. Otherwise, what's the point, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Sorry, get off you go.
And in a course, I can give you some principles and some ways of going about each step of your business. I can give you some examples. I can give you some exercises to do to accomplish this particular step. But when I walk with somebody as a coach, we can talk about what are the particulars of your business. And how will we adapt and work with this in meeting the needs of your clients? And it's just so much more tailor-made that it offers a much higher level of value to the client.
David, I've heard that statistic, 2-3%, you know, somewhere between 2-5% for, you know, online courses or sort of self-directed learning people actually complete. Why is that? Firstly, my observation is like it seems to be that people want the transformation, they want the change, but they don't want to do the work necessary to achieve it. Why is that, do you think?
Well, I'm looking at the books around me, and every one of them has value to me. Every one of them I purchased for a particular reason. And planned. Now, some of them are reference works where I intended to go to particular things and just use this chapter or that section or something. But most of them I assumed I was going to read in full. But I have a few books on my shelves that I have not read in full. And
you guys can only see a few. Yeah. You know, there's way more books here.
Yeah. And why is that? Well, part of it is that my mind moves from one thing to the next. And sometimes I think, well, I'm still going to go back and read those other ones. And I see people doing this with courses, that instead of just getting one course and having set aside a particular time every day for a period of time, they will get one course and they'll start working on it. And then they'll say, oh, I need this other one. And now I need this other one. And never finish any of them.
I think the attention span is part of it. People, they get overwhelmed. They hear something that's promised that a course is going to do. They buy it, but then slowly realize that's not going to work the way they said it was. And so again, it sits on the shelf. Or that's what I've noticed and experienced too.
Or they realize, oh, I could listen to all these teaching segments and that's not going to change me unless I do the work.
Yeah.
And I really don't feel like taking the time to do that work.
I think one of the other things about this, Pete, is that people are uniquely different. I mean, the Clifton Strengths says that the chances of someone being the same talents as another person is like 1 in 33 million to have them all in a row. So we're all very different and we all have different fears. And so when you're talking about books, I love this one, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And that is part of the issue that people have when they start doing these things. They get into that mindset of I'm not good enough or I can't do it, or there's so many different things that stop people from doing it. But it's because they're not taking the action to do it. And when we talk about the principles of neurolinguistic programming, like the success principles, it's know what you want, then it's take action, and then it's to have that behavioral flexibility, then to be able to observe the impact of that behavior, and then be able to have the physiology and the psychology that matches where you want to be. And I do that like that because I do it in a little dance for my program. But and I think that we have to understand that people are unique. There is no one size fits all for human beings. Yeah,
right.
That we're all different. And so in your instance, Pete, is that people learn, and people also learn differently. Some people are academic. Some people are visual, kinesthetic, auditory, digital. So some people can learn from reading a book. Other people learn from watching something. Other people learn from doing. Yeah, taking the action. And it's the Kilpatrick model talks about that 20-30-20-10, where 10% is in the learning, 20% is in your mentors, and 30% is in actually going out and doing it. I mean, 70% is in actually doing it, 20% is in the mentors, and 10% is in just the books and the learning. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I guess part of the question behind the question is that just thinking about the implications for a business owner moving themselves towards Six Star is that it's not easy. It's not hard. I mean, we recorded an episode earlier on this morning and one of the guests talked about doing the hardest work in terms of getting clear on values and purpose and whatever. So if there is this tendency to want the change, so we want to be a Six Star business and all that comes with it, but there's this kind of, and I think it is, we're all different, but I think there is this human sort of tendency to want the easy, take the easy path. What is that? I'm struggling to think of the question I want to ask. Is that, what implications does that have for like encouraging business owners to do it? It's going to be hard, but there's no shortcut.
It's interesting because when you look at people's levels of motivation, even if we looked at Hertzberg motivation model, one of the big things is around achievement. And I was talking to someone the other day about this whole concept of people that go mountain climbing, you know, or climbing Kilimanjaro or the Himalayas, and they write books about it and they do movies about it, yeah. And they will walk up those mountains and they will lose fingers in frostbite and they'll keep going in that determination, that courage, and they get to the top. Yeah. And they get to the top and they're like, oh my gosh, that was the most difficult thing I ever did in my life. Yeah. And then they get to go down to the bottom. And what's the next thing that they want to do?
Climb the next one.
Climb another mountain. Yeah. So people really get to feel a sense of achievement when something hurts or when something's challenging or difficult. And so it's, but they have to be prepared to and willing to go through that difficult path, and you're stepping down the brush in the forest, if you like, to see the path forward. And sometimes people get stuck behind a big tree.
Mm.
You know? And so I think, you know, and I'm trying to answer your question, Per. Sorry if I just did it with with an analogy.
Well, it wasn't a very well articulated question. Be fair.
Yeah, but because I think one of the questions you're asking is why don't people do it? Because you think people want to take the easy route. But the easy route rarely leads to satisfaction, I guess is what I'm saying. The easy route rarely leads to achievement. It's just the easy route is getting stuck in busyness, yeah, and just doing stuff. But the real achievement comes from when you put your heart and soul into something, or when it's been tough and you can see the result at the end. I mean, even in simplicity, if you buy a piece of IKEA furniture and you open it up and you, and I don't know about you, I really hate buying IKEA furniture, but we keep doing it. I don't know why. Yeah, and we just put a lot of it together and I'm there and I'm cursing it and there's the little screws that keep burring. And, you know, but when I finish that piece of furniture and I put it out in our new laundry and I put the washing machine on it, and I thought, that looks fantastic. Only because of the effort that I had to put into the thing. It's not because it's an amazing piece of furniture. Yeah. So I don't think everybody goes the easy route first. I think people get busy and they go, what can I do to feel like I'm achieving something? And then they take the easy path, but they don't feel that sense of fulfillment unless they do something that's challenging for them.
Dana and David, do you find that with the people that you serve? Have they come up against a wall or an experience of challenge where they've tried to do it themselves, and have they procrastinated and then come up against more pain and then they've figured out they need help? Like, what have you experienced with that?
We find that people coming to us generally have one of three problems. One of them is that they're trying to do things in the wrong order. And they can't figure out why this step isn't working when they don't realize they haven't done the necessary foundational steps before it. That's one of the things we run into. Another one is that they've been sold a bill of goods saying that this is the key. And it doesn't matter what that one key is. The idea that there's just one key that's going to make it all come together is itself a myth. There, I can give you a couple handfuls of different keys that are all important. And we put it together in a what we call your pathway to profit that sets out 12 steps that people need to take, but each of them may require several different skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have those skill sets, they may have to acquire those skill sets, or they may have to hire someone else to do some of those things that they don't have the skills for. And then the third problem that we run into with people is that they're trying to do a half dozen things all at the same time. And they are convinced that all of them are important and that they cannot run their business without doing all of them right now. And what we try to help them see through is to say, let's take a step back, let's look at the bigger picture, and let's say, what if you just work on this step this week, and then we'll take the next step next week. And they are, you know, almost, you know, taken aback by the idea that they could spend a week and not work on all of those things at once.
But then at the end of the week, they're like, why didn't I do this sooner?
Well, you know, it's they've accomplished something.
And we gave them permission. And that's what I love, is to be able to give people the permission to do this and not have to do it all.
There's gold just in that. Less is, it's that saying, less is more.
Right.
It's an example of that.
There is no such thing as multitasking.
Well, I remember when I used to do marital counseling, I would frequently have a couple come in, and one would say, well, this is our problem. And the other one will say, no, there's this problem. And by the time we get, you know, into this conversation ways, I've got a dozen different problems sitting in front of me on the table, so to speak. And I can't count, you know, how many times I've had this conversation with people and said, I have absolute confidence that we can help together resolve any one of those problems. And that when we're done with that, we can resolve the next one. But I doubt that we're going to make much progress trying to do all of them at the same time. And yeah. Then when we could identify one thing that they wanted to work on and deal with that, and then promise them that next we'll work on the issue that you're concerned about, and then we can make some progress and see some good results.
I love that. Again, it's like what Kelly was saying at the start, it's not that prescriptive. It's sitting there case by case, again, and working on it simplistically, like doing the first thing first. So keeping it simple, but also making it, understanding them, keeping it simple, and then making it real, realistic for them to achieve.
Sure.
It's like, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And that's if you like elephant. Everything's got to be chunked down into pieces.
Exactly.
And you're not vegan.
Yeah, well, I don't really eat elephant. It's just the same. So, you know, I change it because it's probably not politically correct anymore. You know, how do you eat cake?
All at once.
Yes, obviously. Cake.
Well, one thing I'm curious about, maybe slightly tangential, Dana and David, is kind of you both had very different lives, paralegal and pastor, and you're now doing something ostensibly very different. What would you say you've brought from your previous, you know, experiences into what you're doing now? Because it seems like here and here, like 180 degrees apart, but there must be some connection. I'd be interested to explore that.
Right. As I mentioned to you earlier, that I had been in a number of different congregations throughout the years and served some very large and even one very, I'd say, huge congregation. And that was sort of at the pinnacle of my career, if you want to think of it that way. But the skills that I was known for and brought to that task were strategic planning, helping to identify where we are and where we want to be and what are the steps to get from here to there. And then working with coaching other staff members. And in that large congregation, we had, I think, 26 on staff, and helping different staff members to do their best and to accomplish what, you know, they're seeking to do in each of their particular ministries. So if I, you know, look back, I'd say strategic planning and coaching others were the big things that were my focuses or foci in that congregation. Those are the things that I'm doing in this business as well, though in a entirely different niche.
Got it. And I would also throw in teaching. I mean, that's your spiritual gift, is he's this amazing teacher. So he's bringing that gift into our coaching and regularly teaches. So that I see that too as well. But for me, paralegal, I worked in various different areas of the law over the years. Personal injury and trial preparation were probably the majority of that time. And I don't know if you've ever gotten, I don't know what you guys' backgrounds are, but getting a case ready for trial is a big deal. You have to be organized. You have so many moving parts You've got exhibits, you've got witnesses, you've got everything, and you've got an attorney who's overbearing and wants everything to be awesome. And it's my job to make him look like the rock star before the judge and the jury.
And
so,
and you've got human beings on the other side that who have real needs and real struggles.
Well, right.
And need somebody to be their advocate the midst of this,
yes.
In the midst
client,
of this process.
Not on the other side. The people on the other side. They're
no,
the
I mean your clients.
Yes. Yes. Our clients, yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
To hold their hand through that really rough part of their life, whether that was because they'd been injured at work or in a car accident, if they're going through a divorce, what was the reason for this trial? It's never a pleasant time of life, so.
And
so I bring those things. I'm highly organized. I problem solve. I get things done. I'm an action taker. And so.
And you're an amazing encourager.
Okay. Yeah.
That I think was one of the best things you brought to your legal career is that you always remembered the client that needed someone to care for them in the midst of all, you know, these high power people that are concerned about winning the case.
Example of kind of just going, using the strengths, Kelly used the term earlier, strengths, yeah. Or the gifts that are inside, that doesn't really matter where you're expressing it, you're expressing what's inside of you. Kelly, what about you? When you look back on your life, and you look at the dots that have brought you to where you are now, what are you drawing on?
Well, there's a lot of dots there, Pete. I did a bit of dental nursing for my dad when I was younger, and then worked in bars, and I worked in the travel industry and hospitality and sales and leadership and development. And one of the things that I think is the biggest learning, and I love this for the hospitality and travel industry, is that you meet people of all different varieties, probably a little bit like what David and Dana have had in their communities. But it's the place where you get people, you meet people who like you, who don't like you, who complain, who give you accolades, who walk into and say, do you know who I am? And others who walk in and say, I'm so excited to be here. And, you know, you all types of egos and people from the corporate world, the private world, from people coming into a hotel because it's something that they do every week for work, to those little country bumpkins that have saved up for a year to come into the big smoke and have their 50th anniversary. If you ask me what I have bought through my career, it's that understanding that people are unique and different and all have their own special talents, as I said, and strengths, and being able to really recognize those very quickly and being able to arrange those in teams and in individuals to be able to create, if you like, that beautiful music that you get from a choir. Yeah, you can see where people fit in the world and how they can do what they do and really enjoy it. And it's what David and Dana are talking about. They're using the talents that they have, and they're bringing so much joy to people in what they're doing. And wouldn't it be amazing if so many people could, if many people could do that? Yeah, I remember I used to have to go to these events and be the entertainment, you know, at the table as the host. And one of the questions that I would ask people to get going was, if you could do anything you wanted, but you haven't won lotto, okay? So you don't have, all of a sudden have millions of dollars, but you could do anything you wanted, what would it be? And do you know, rarely did they say what I'm doing now. Mm. And I am so fortunate to be a person who can say, do you know what? I would love to be doing what I do now. And I want more people to have that. And it's because I get to use my talents for building relationships, for recognizing people's individual strengths, for my empathy talents, my related talents, to building trust with people, to get them to create change in their own lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there, when I did my talents 30 years later, I was like, oh my gosh, look, there they are. but when I look back, when you look back at your life, you see those talents have come through all the way. I wanted to be Wonder Woman. I still do. I wanted to be the Bionic Woman. There's a Seeker of Truth and the Listener. Then I wanted to be an actress on stage, and I am on stage now, but I'm doing facilitation. Yeah, I wanted to be in Willy Wonka's chocolate shop, you know, the shop, because everyone comes in there and they're always happy and they're smiley, and that's what I want to create in the world. So, yeah, I'm really passionate, if you can't tell, Pete, about people.
Can't tell at all.
Using their talents to do what they do well, because you just get a much better performance. People don't have work performance, they have personal issues that impact their performance. And if we're going to look at that and change that, then we're going to change the way of the world.
Woo! I just want to reflect on some what you just said, Kelly. It seems to me like for someone to be able to deliver 6-star, because that requires them to look at themselves, do the work on themselves, and also and have the care factor enough to do that, they need to be in a place, like you just said, and I'm sure like David and Dana are in, that you actually love what you do. Because if someone is in a situation where they don't love what they do, the forces of that opposition saps their energy,
correct,
diverts their attention, and they're not going to give any care to what they do. Yes. And they're not going to care to do the work.
And that's when they look for the easy stuff, Pete. The easy way out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they settle. They just settle. They don't strive for better. They're content to settle and miss out on something that could be so much better.
And one of the common things between all of you is obviously your strengths, but your ability to understand people and honor them all as individuals and bring that sense of care and love to what you do and to each person.
Yes, it's so important. People rarely are told that they're appreciated, valued, and respected, and we have the opportunity to do that every day.
Yeah, and it's hard to sometimes realize how much effect that has. Those simple statements of, boy, you have a real strength there. And we don't realize that that rings in their ears for days to come. And it was just an offhand comment sometimes at the moment. But those things make such a huge difference for people.
Absolutely.
Well, we value, respect, and appreciate the three of you for being here, showing up, sharing some of your genius, some of your lives, some of your insights. Av?
I would love to know in closing, if you could, if there was one little thing that you could give our listeners, like something they could take away, do, think, or just sort of process, what would that one thing be?
The one thing that I would say is that we tell people to believe in themselves, but what we have to understand is that there are only three things that are within your control, and that is what you say, what you do, and how you behave. And so you have that power within you to make happen whatever you need to make happen. And that creates that self-belief, that determination and courage for you to do something different. So what I would say, if what you're doing is not working, please do something else.
I love that.
Thank you, Kelly.
And one of the things that comes to my mind is thinking of how many people have a dream and for one reason or another, they constantly put it on the back burner and say, well, maybe someday. And if there's something that people really want to do, or if there's something they really need to do to make a change in their life, I would encourage them to do it, to step out, take the risk, and do what they need to do. And yeah, they could fall on their face, but then you just get up and start over. So much better than never having, you know, gone for your dream.
Two sides of the same coin there, I feel. Take action. Yeah. Do it.
Beautiful.
Live a life of gratitude. Find something every day to be grateful for. Start the day with gratitude and end the day with gratitude.
Yes,
I love that.
Your brain doesn't allow you to be grateful and angry at the same time.
That's right.
So it's just not wired that way. You can't be grateful and angry at the same time. So I love that, Dana, that being grateful for something, anything.
Yeah. That's a great reminder.
Thank you. Thank you, Dana. Thank you, David. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Pete. I have really loved this conversation and so grateful that you were all here at this perfect moment in time.
Thanks for having us. It's been great to be here. Lovely to meet you, David and Dana.
Yes, very nice to meet you.
It's been a delightful conversation.
It has. Thank you so much.
See you all soon.
See you very soon.
That was another stimulating, thought-provoking episode of the Six Star Business Podcast.
Thank you so much for getting this far. Please go ahead, like, subscribe, and give us a comment, review.
Rating, if there was a 6-star, we'd love you to give us a 6-star rating, but to just go as high as you can.
And if you want to continue the conversation with us and all the cool people who've joined us from the podcast, head on over to apply.sixstarbusiness.community.
See you there.